If you're visiting with us tonight, you're our honored guest, and we'd love to have you to come back and visit with us any chance you have, anytime you're in the area. If you have not already done so, we'd like for you to sign the register on the podium on the left as you go out. Jimmy and Pam will be back Friday from Ireland. They're there, and they're checking on a work that we support, Ryan O'Rourke. In his absence, we have with us Brother Ron Williams. Ron's been preaching for the past 38 years, and he's preached in Humboldt, Tennessee, also Saraland, Alabama, and also in Evergreen, Alabama, before moving to Huntsville. He's been the pulpit minister at the Lincoln Church of Christ in Huntsville for the past 18 years. He holds grief seminars from time to time, and that's where I first met Ron back in 2009. He said, just told me a few minutes ago, that he also has a cancer support classes at CCI. He's a graduate from Free Hardman and also Alabama Christian. He and his wife, Bonnie, are both from Northport, Alabama. They've been married for 37 years. They have two boys and three grandchildren. At this time, Brother Ron Williams.
Nationally, today is the day that we honor fathers. And I'd like for us to think about tonight two different fathers with obviously very different situations concerning their life. In Genesis chapter 13, we read these words, verse 1. Then Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him to the south. Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abraham called on the name of the Lord. Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. The Bible tells us, obviously, a lot about Abraham, the father of the Jewish nation. We also know a few things about Lot as well, not only in the Old Testament, but in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 7. The Bible talks about Lot being a righteous man. And yet in the city of Sodom, he was vexed in regard to his soul because of the great immorality that he found there. These both were very good men. They obviously were relatives. Abraham was the uncle, Lot was the nephew. According to Genesis chapter 11, they went out from the Ur of Chaldees to Haran, to the land of Canaan. And they begin to travel together. But what's rather interesting is that these two men, even though they traveled together, were quite different in regard to the decisions that they made. They raised their families differently. They evidently made different decisions about where they were going to be and what they were going to be about. And thus, the results, as we'll see in our study this evening, were quite different. Here's the question, why? Why were they so different? Five questions will help us to understand the difference that these two men, as fathers, as husbands, made that drastically resulted in different results. The first question, who should I marry? Who should be the one that I select as a mate? Abram, as he was called before God changed his name to Abraham, married Sarai, later on named Sarah, in Genesis chapter 11, 29 to 31. Now, what's rather interesting about that arrangement is that Abram married his half-sister. They had the same father, different mothers. Perhaps, and we know Sarah was 9 years younger than Abram was, perhaps for a period of time they were not with one another and thus became attracted toward each other later on. It was somewhat the custom of the day of that people sometimes to marry relatives. But it's rather interesting that he chose someone of his own race, of his own lineage, of his own background to marry and to be the wife and eventually, hopefully, the mother of his children. What's rather interesting is that Lot and his marriage to his wife is not even mentioned until Genesis chapter 19 and verse 15. Lot travels with Abram. He goes different places with him and Sarah, along with his grandfather. But his wife's not even mentioned until Genesis 19, verse 15, when the angel of the Lord, when the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, "Arise, take your wife and your daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of this city." Now, it may not be the case, but since Abram married Sarah in Genesis chapter 11, toward the end of that, chapter 12, chapter 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, Lot's wife is mentioned. Could it be that she was a citizen of Sodom? Because when we read about Lot's wife, Lot is now a citizen of that immoral city of Sodom and its twin city, Gomorrah. Could it be that Lot's wife was from a different race, perhaps? Certainly a different type background. She, if she had lived in Sodom, would have seen horrific, terrible things probably all of her life, because of the great immorality that was known in that city and its twin city, Gomorrah. Of course, she's remembered as the one that turned around and looked back. In the text, when the angels tell Lot, "Take your wife, take your daughters, run as fast as you can out of this city. We can't do anything until you're away. And don't look back." Verse 26, "But his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt." Why did she look back? Because she had just been more curious than anybody else was? Or could it have been that from her frame of mind and background of history, that she didn't really think that the angels of God could do what they said they were going to do? You may recall that in Luke chapter 17 that Jesus referenced this very point of history. Jesus is referring to the idea of commitment and faithfulness to the Lord. "In that day, he who is on the housetop and his goods are in the house, let him not come down to take them away. And likewise, the one who is in the field, let him not turn back." Verse 32 of Luke 17. Remember Lot's wife. "Whoever seeks to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it." Perhaps we're being too hard on Lot's wife. But Lot made a choice. He married likely someone that didn't have a history with God, that did not understand what righteousness and unrighteousness was all about. And she turned around and disobeyed God, and it cost her her very life. I know this is not earth-shattering, But in my humble opinion, there is nothing more important that one will ever do in this life in regard to earthly relationships than the person they choose to be their partner in life. As a marriage counselor working with a church, from time to time, we talk to families who are having horrific problems. And it may simply boil down to the fact he comes from one background of religion or lack thereof, she comes from a totally different background, and they can't get along with anything in life. Abram married someone like him that loved the Lord. Now, we know Sarah was not perfect, neither was Abram. But at least their context of history and framework of what they lived and how they lived reflected from God's perspective. Could it be that Lot and his wife did not have that same kind of continuity of heart and mind? Question number two about why Lot and Abraham were different. Where am I looking? You may recall that in the context of the passage in Genesis chapter 13, that Lot is blessed with great herds, Abraham the same way. And therefore they run into a conflict problem. There's not enough water, not enough vegetation to take care of all their herds. The herdsmen are having fights with one another. And Abram speaks to Lot and says, look, you go one way and I'll go the other. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, then I'll go to the left. You choose, which was rather benevolent of an older man to a younger man. It should have been just the opposite in regard to respect. But you read the words of Genesis chapter 13 and verse 10. And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go toward Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east. And they separated from each other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. Lot, what are you looking for? Well, I'm looking for an easy way out. I'm looking for something that will be a blessing to me. He was thinking about me, myself, and I. But then we read the very next words. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. Do you think for a moment that Lot had heard of the reputation of Sodom and Gomorrah? Very likely he had. But you see, what Lot was looking for was easy street. He was looking for where everything could be fine for him. And what's rather interesting is that he pitched his tent toward Sodom, and then almost immediately you find him in the very city of Sodom. Abraham looked toward where God told him to look. Chapter 13, 14, and 15, the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had departed from him, lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward, for all the land which you see, I give to you and your descendants forever. Here's the point. Where you look will determine where you go. And that's true both here as well as for eternity as well. It's so easy in our world today to look for the easy way, to look for the glamorous way, to look for the way of prosperity or the way of fun or whatever it is that we may be looking for. Believe me, in this world today, you'll find it. Whatever you're looking for today, you will find it. But realize by finding it and by looking that eventually you'll be living there as well. You see, because after I look at something and decide that's where I want to go, that's eventually where I'm going to end up living. And when you look at the life of Lot, you find him in the very city of great devotion toward God. Chapter 18, verse 20, "And the Lord said, Behold, the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that have come to me. And if not, I will come, I will know." Chapter 19, "The two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom." He pitched his tent there. That's what he looked when he saw. Now he's living there. And by living there, he's in a city where there's great wickedness everywhere you look. You remember in chapter 18, the Lord and angels had appeared to Abram. Knowing the righteous individual that he was, they said, we need to tell you. The Lord said in human language, in the human form, I need to tell you what I'm about to do. I'm about to go destroy Sodom and Gomorrah because of the great wickedness against me. And remember Abraham? He begins to bargain with God, and he starts with 50, 45, 40, 30, 20. Lord, if you find 10 righteous souls there, would you destroy the city because there's 10 righteous individuals there? And the Lord said, no. If there's 10 there, we'll save the city. Where are you living? And I realize today that it's not so much the city address that you and I have, but it's the people that we spend our time with. It's the environment in which you and I have made it to be our life, whatever our life is. That's what we're talking about. But I'm telling you that the difference between what you're looking for and then where you end up living will have a tremendous effect on what the outcome will be. Years ago, when I was involved in youth ministry, I always would look for anything dealing with youth ministry that would help me in talking and understanding young people, working with them. I remember a preacher friend of mine in Arkansas writing about a dear Christian lady that he had met. Because of lack of funds, because of husband losing his job, they had lived in a very poor part of that particular city there in Arkansas. And their son began to surround himself with the wrong kind of friends. And he began to have trouble in school and trouble with the decisions he was making with his time. And after warning, after warning, after work, after work, after doing everything they could possibly do, they decided that regardless of what sacrifices they had to make, that mom and that dad decided to pack their bags, sell their house, and move to another part of the state, totally different from everything and anything that they had known and been accustomed to, simply because their child and their future with their child was far more important than what luxuries or what blessings they might have had in that town. And that's what they did. And thankfully, it saved their son. You see, Abram lived in the land where God had told him. And because of that, he was blessed for so doing. But another question: who am I marrying? Where am I looking? Or what am I looking for in life? Where am I going to live in life? But what about this one? Where am I going to lead? We understand, not just today because it's Father's Day nationally speaking, that fathers and mothers must lead their children in the way that God would have them to go if we want to be blessed. And we want our children to be blessed. And if we don't lead them in the right way, and certainly if they don't follow in the right way, then there's going to be problems. That's just the way it is. It hasn't been that way from the very beginning of time. But what's so rather interesting about this particular narrative is that when Lot had the opportunity to lead his family, he was not even able to do so. Look at the text there in Genesis chapter 19. Lot went out and spoke to his son-in-laws who had married his daughters and said, "Get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city." But to his son-in-law, he seemed to be joking. And then as we read already verse 15, when the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry and say, "Arise, take your wife, your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city." And while he lingered, I don't know. The men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, the hands of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. And they came to pass when they had brought them outside that he said, "Escape for your life. Do not look behind you nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains lest you be destroyed." Here's Lot, now in a great predicament. Why had he not stood up beforehand and said, "Enough's enough. We're tired of this unrighteousness, this immorality. We're tired of all the sin that's in this great city. We're leaving." But even in the midst of a destruction mode of God, he lingers. And the angels almost push him and say, "Run for your life." Now, what's the difference? We know Abraham and his wife Sarah were not perfect individuals. There were times when they tried to deceive others around them. Certainly, Sarah doubted the fact that she, at the age of 90, would be able to have that child of promise. They already had tried to help God out by giving Hagar, and through her and union with Abram, Ishmael, to be that child of promise. God had said no to. But in the midst of all that, she had stayed faithful to God. Abraham had done the same thing. And that's where they were. That was the direction they were going in. You see, when parents are moving in God's direction, it is amazing how things begin to work out in regard to the children. Oh, I know that children have minds of their own, and when they become adults, they use those minds to make decisions that, yes, have consequences. But here's Abraham, instead of Lot, unlike Lot, saying, "This is what we're going to do, and this is where we're going to go, and this is how we're going to get there." Sort of reminds you of Joshua. "Regardless of what you want to do, as for me and my house," Joshua 24:15, "we're going to serve the Lord." Now, you can either follow us, you can get out of our way, we're serving God. Well, that's what parents, fathers and mothers, need to do today. And if you don't think it works, I want you to think about what happens in Genesis chapter 22. God tells Abram, I want you to go take your son, this son of promise, Isaac, and I want you to offer him on the land, in the land of Moriah, where I tell you to go. Offer him as a sacrifice to me. You read verse 9 and 10. Then they came to the place in which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order. And he bound Isaac, his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Now read in between the lines. Do you find Isaac running for his life away from his dad with a knife? You don't, do you? Hebrews chapter 11 tells us that Abraham had already figured it out. God, if you want me to kill my son Isaac, that son of promise, that through him the entire world is going to be blessed and our family is going to become a great nation, there's only one other thing that you're going to have to do. You're going to raise him up. That's exactly what Hebrews 11 says. So he had already figured it out. But what about Isaac? Here's a son who has confidence in his father, even in the worst of situations, it would seem. Dads, I ask you, where are you leading? And who is following you? One final question. What is my legacy? When my life is over and someone turns around and looks back at what I stood for, not only as a Christian, not only as a minister, not only as a counselor, not only as a father, what will people say? Because good or bad, they're going to say something. And that's true of every one of us, regardless of what responsibility or accountability we have in this world. We all have a legacy that will follow us one day, one place or the other. Lot lost his wife. And you would think that that would have been the end of the story. But if you know chapter 19, the end of chapter 19, you know that terrible things continue to happen. Lot's two daughters decided to get their dad drunk and to have relations with him because that way they could have children through his, by his seed. And what's awful about that is that those two sons that were born to those two daughters incestuously through their father became Moab, the beginning of the Moabite family, and Benadab, who became the father of the Ammonite family. And these are just a few references, Numbers 22 to 24, Judges 3, Judges 10, Judges 11, and you could go on and on and on, where the Moabites and the Ammonites were a plague to the Israelites. They detested them in every kind of way, and they showed it in their lives. There's the legacy of Lot. Now, Abraham's legacy, as we would guess, was totally different. Abraham dies a very old age. Ishmael and Isaac bury him there in Machpelah, where Sarah was buried. And we read chapter 25, verse 11, and it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac. Why did God bless Isaac? Why was he called that son of promise? Why in Hebrews chapter 11 is he continued to be said to be both Isaac and then eventually Jacob, to be the perpetuation of the race? It's because there was a father involved in his life that could tell him about God leading him and guiding him and being there for him through every situation of life that he was involved in. Again, I know Children don't always do what we want them to do. Neither do fathers or mothers, for that matter. But here's two fathers with totally different results. Could it be as simple as who they selected as a mate, where they were looking and what they were looking for, where they decided to live and dwell, where they decided to lead, and what their legacy was all about? Some of you may have flown into O'Hare International Airport in Chicago. The reason that's called O'Hare International Airport is because there was a young man that in 1942, as a naval fighter pilot, did a very heroic thing. He was on the great carrier ship Lexington, called affectionately the Lady Lex. He was up in the air when he saw 9 Japanese planes headed to bomb and destroy the Lady Lex, and he was the only pilot in the sky at that particular time. Butch O'Hara raced down and with his ammunition and guns killed 5 of them and sent them into the sea. The other 4 turned away back to their own carrier. He was the first naval officer of that war to receive the United States Medal of Honor. Unfortunately, the next year, Butch O'Hara, Lieutenant Commander Butch O'Hara, was killed in battle. But the people of Chicago were so proud of him that they decided to name their airport the O'Hara International Airport because of their hometown hero. But there's more to that story than you may know. Butch O'Hara's dad lived in the 1910s, 1920s, what we would call the Roaring Twenties, the 1930s. He was a lawyer. They called him Artful Eddie. He was a lawyer for Al Capone, the great mobster of Chicago. Artful Eddie became not only a very successful lawyer in getting mobster after mobster off of sentencing, trials, and other such things, but also Al Capone put him in charge of illegal gambling, dog racing all over the United States. Artful Eddie became a millionaire plus because of that. And things were great for him. Power, might, money, he had it all. But then one day, strangely enough, he went to the federal government, to the feds, and turned himself in. He was going to confess and tell all. And they asked him why. And his answer was, because I have a little boy that needs to know that his daddy did something good instead of something bad. As you would guess, Al Capone was not happy. And through a series of events, mobsters caught Artful Eddie where he was not supposed to be, unprotected, and 2 shotgun blasts killed him. But his son, Butch O'Hara, went to Annapolis and graduated from the Naval Academy and went into the war. And in 1942, downed 5 Japanese planes headed to the Lady Lex to destroy it. And they named an airport after him because he had a dad that decided that right was right and wrong was wrong, and he had to change for his son's sake. I wonder tonight in this audience, could there be a mom or a dad, or for that matter, a child that needs to change. Because right is right and wrong is wrong, and you know that where you are and what you're doing and the direction that you're headed in is not going to work well for you and for eternity. Abraham did what was right. Lot did not. And it cost him, and for the people of God, for many, many hundreds of years, great sorrow and pain. This evening, it's my tremendous privilege to send the Lord's invitation to you. If you need to come back to Christ and to His church, if you've never began that walk with Him and you need to become a New Testament Christian tonight, right is right, wrong is wrong. Come right now. It's going to be standing and sing the invitation song. Won't you come?